Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday morning. In just a moment, a wonderful conversation about Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage. I'm Kathleen Dunn, along with Cheryl Gasser, Director of Talk for our wonderful network, and it is our pledge drive. We are asking, have you noticed how much you rely on Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network for enlightening, informative discussions? And I know you do. We're here now to remind you that WPR relies on YOU to keep programs like this one on the air. This is our fall membership drive, and a gift of any amount makes a big difference in our ability to pay the programming that you count on. So we ask you please to make a gift right now online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Hello, Cheryl.
Hello, Kathleen. Good morning. We have a goal this hour of 25 pledges. Actually, 24 now. Someone's already made a pledge this hour. And these hourly goals, they're simply incredibly important. They help us to stay on track with the funds that we need to keep the discussion going here on Wisconsin Public Radio. 24 pledges in the next 55 minutes, so please take a moment now. Give online. It's fast and easy. WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, we'll be talking to Christopher Anderson. We've spoken with him about other books that he's done. His latest is Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage. I read the whole thing in the last couple days. It's a wonderful read. Lots of amazing information about Barack's father, their first date, all this information in this book, and discussions like the one that we're going to have on the Ideas Network are possible because of your financial support. We ask you please to give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And if you pledge $150, we are very happy to send you a copy of Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage by Christopher Anderson, who is the number one New York Times best-selling author, and this book will be number one, I'm sure, very soon. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Either way, giving is so simple. We need your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay for it. If you can use a credit card, please do, because it saves time and money. And don't worry, because we never share your personal information with any other organization.
Some people find that $10 a month is the right amount. It sounds good. It's $120 for the year. But you decide what is the right amount, of course, for you. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just 22 pledges to go this hour. Let's hear from you. You know, listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, we hear this time and time again. It's like a tuition-free, lifelong education.
Sure is.
All you need to tune in is a computer or a radio, but we need your support, and we need it now to make that happen. So please contribute now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And for a pledge of $120 or more, that's $10 a month, we'll be happy to send you the WPR membership card. With this card, you'll get 2-for-1 entrees at restaurants, quite a deal, 2-for-1 stays at B&Bs, 2-for-1 greens fees at golf courses.
Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah, that is, isn't it? I ought to take up some golf. And 2-for-1 admission to cultural attractions.
The venues are all over Wisconsin, Kathleen, as you know, and it's so fitting for a benefit that statewide, like a network like Wisconsin Public Radio, to have a statewide benefit like the member card. So pledge your support now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and the member card will be yours for a pledge of $120 a year or more.
And we also have our book, Michelle and Obama, Portrait of an American Marriage, for your pledge of $150 at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much. If you've already called in a pledge this hour or gone to the computer and made your pledge, our goal, 25 pledges, 22 to go. So thanks to the three of you who've made a contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio and to Conversations with Kathleen Dunn. Make your pledge now, though, if you haven't done so yet, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much.
Thanks, Cheryl. Talk to you later. Christopher Anderson is joining us now. And Christopher has been with us many times before. He has written many, many books on Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, on the Clintons, on the Bushes, on Jackie and Jack. His latest is Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage. He is a number one New York Times bestselling author, and this book is just a wonderful read. I guarantee you that you will enjoy it. He has written 28 books, which have been translated into 25 languages all over the world. He's a former contributing editor of Time Magazine, senior editor of People Magazine. He's written for Life, the New York Times, and Vanity Fair. And he joins us now to talk about Barack and Michelle. And we welcome your on-air phone calls, as we always do. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join our on-air conversation today. Christopher, thank you so much for being with us. Hi. Oh,
thank you for having me, Kathleen. And by the way, after that introduction, I think I better go take a nap.
No.
I'm exhausted just listening to
No, you got to write another book.
Oh, my God.
Which I'm sure you will. You know, I read most of the whole thing in the last couple of days, but I was amazed. I was struck by several things. The first thing that is so striking to me, as it must have been to you, is Barack Obama's father.
Oh, gosh. What a tragic story. Figure. What a tragic
Oh,
figure.
My.
Yeah, I interviewed some of his friends in Hawaii. And, you know, Barack Obama's father was a brilliant Kenyan, and he went to the University of Hawaii. That's where he met Barack's mom. And by the way, they called the Barack Sr. Barack, which I always thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, as
in barracks. But he was, unfortunately, he was somebody who spoke like, you know, James Earl Jones. They said his friends said he sounded like James Earl Jones, only louder. And he was a brilliant man, but very frustrated. He went back to Kenya. Tried to get ahead in the government there for a variety of reasons. He was frustrated in that, and just became a self-destructive alcoholic. And in the end, ended up dying in a driving drunk at the age of 46. And sadly, you know, he left Barack Obama, his son, when Barack was only 10 months old. So he always had this yawning gap in his life, and he later found out, you know, that his father is a very complicated figure.
Mm-hmm. And had a choice at one point. He wanted to further his education of going to Harvard, but the scholarship was without the family, or the new school with the family, and he chose Harvard.
This is the senior. Yeah, what a choice. It tells you a lot about the man, sadly, because he could have taken his infant son and wife, but he chose not to, and of course that led to a relationship he instantly had with another woman in Harvard, at Harvard when he went there. Barack Obama Sr. did end up, you know, having 8 children with 4 different women, so he wasn't really the kind of monogamous type.
No, he sure wasn't. And do you know if President Obama is, I know one of those children at least has died, is he in touch with all of those children?
Yes, he is. As a matter of fact, he's very proud to be related to them all and happy that he has this extended family. And boy, they are impressive. You know, one of his sisters is at Heidelberg University. And, of course, she's from Kenya, you know, but she's at Heidelberg University as a classics professor there. A number of them are Oxford educated. I mean, it's really an impressive bunch of people. There are a couple of people who've also battled with younger half-siblings of his who've battled drugs, and unfortunately one of them died in a motorcycle accident. But, yeah, he's very happy to have the extended family.
Don't you think it's remarkable, and I guess you could say the same of Bill Clinton, that this man becomes the most powerful figure in the United States, and his father was pretty much a jerk to him?
Yeah, and I think that really, you know, Bill Clinton's father, his biological father, died before he was born. So, you know, he also had that kind of, and his father also was an alcoholic and drove drunk and ended up dying in a car crash. But, I think it's amazing. I think they're striving for something, you know. And what's interesting as far as Barack's rise to power is what a role Michelle has played from the very beginning. I mean, she is his. As he said, you know, she's my rock, the one person who keeps it real.
Mm-hmm. And she is growing up in this Leave It to Beaver
right. Kind
of family on the south side of Chicago. I think that's a very apt description of her, and I think Obama has said that about her family, hasn't he?
Exactly. They either say Ozzie and Harriet or Leave It to Beaver. Of course, you know, the whole generations now have no idea what we're talking about.
Oh, I know. Oh, how true, Christopher.
But through reruns, everybody knows the Brady Bunch, and I think we can cite them. I mean, this is an interesting thing about Michelle, is that when you look at her girlhood on the south side of Chicago, it's just all American. You know, she played with Barbies. She played. She, as I said, memorized every episode of the Brady Bunch. She, went to the dances. Her favorite, you know, performer was Stevie Wonder, also President Obama's favorite performer. And these are kind of cultural touchstones, I think, that we have that people recognize. And we haven't had that with past presidents, by and large, because I've written about the Kennedys and, as you said, the Clintons and the Bushes. And, you know, there was definitely a barrier, even with the folksy nature of the Bushes. You know, you always had a feeling, and I think Laura is a great first lady, but you always had this feeling that she was hiding quite a lot behind that candidate smile, you know?
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the issue of race, which weeds its way into the book, as of course it was. It must have been quite something, not for his mother's aunt's family, which was pretty, you know, open-minded about things, but still, we're talking about a time in America where interracial marriage was against the law. Mm-hmm. So we've got these threads in the book of their being very open-minded. I'd like for you to talk about that. Michelle's family being a little concerned that President Obama's had a white grandmother and grandfather. And then, oh, there's so much to talk about. Mm-hmm. Michelle's dealing with her roommate at Princeton.
Oh, what a story that one is.
Uh-huh.
First of all, as far as the parents are concerned, it is fascinating that Barack Obama's maternal grandparents, his mother's mother and father, were white and brought up in Kansas and totally open to the idea in 1960-61 of their daughter marrying this guy from Africa. Who knows what made them so open-minded in a time when, as you said, half the states in this country banned, you know, it was illegal for interracial marriage. It seems astounding that recently that was the case. And yet his own family, her own family, Michelle's family, having, you know, grown up in the south side of Chicago in the largest African-American community in the country at the time, you know, that was kind of the capital of Black America, sort of, Chicago. And they didn't, think that an interracial marriage, and this is when Barack was dating Michelle, you know, they worried, like a lot of people of their generation might, about how much strain that would put on a relationship and how difficult it would be for, you know, her to be involved with a biracial fellow. So it was interesting, the generational differences. And her family, by the way, his grandmother, Toot, is that the Hawaiian word for grandma, just is a remarkable figure in the book in particular. I mean, she really is the one who raised Barack, and she was the first woman vice president of the Bank of Hawaii. She brought herself up by her bootstraps, you know, the secretary, didn't go to college, but worked very hard, and a very, very bright woman.
Yes, a very bright woman. And it turns out that there was some, probably not marriage, but the New York Times, which I haven't had a chance to look at very carefully today, the front page of the story looks at Michelle's roots and finds, is it a great-grandfather who was the child of a plantation owner and a slave?
Yeah, it's funny because I have that in the book, that when she was at the age of 10, she went to the plantation. She was taken there by her family where her forebears had been slaves. And it's quite an amazing journey for her, I think, and to realize that a large segment of the family went back to the South after retiring. So there is that link with her roots. But another interesting thing that isn't mentioned in the Times is that, you know, Michelle has so many relatives, and they're so varied and far-flung, she actually has a first cousin who's a rabbi.
Isn't that interesting?
And I have that in the book as well. His name is Capers Funny. How's that for a name? And he's a bona fide, he converted to Judaism and has his own synagogue in Chicago.
So much was felt and said about his being a child of really the world, but your book reinforces that, doesn't Christopher? The time that he spent in Indonesia, the travels that he did in Europe and in Pakistan, he seemed to be able to fit in and be a leader in some ways in many different cultures.
Oh, when he was during his time in Indonesia, when he was a boy, his mother married a fellow named Lolo Soetoro, who was Indonesian. She went there with her young son. He was seven at the time. He lived there for 3 years, went to school in Indonesia. And at one point during his class, they asked him, one of his teachers asked all the students what they wanted to be, and he said president. But of course, they thought he meant president of Indonesia.
Indonesia.
That's not what he meant. yeah, he isn't. But you know, the interesting thing is his real search, I think, was for roots in the African American community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's what he really yearned for, and that's what he found when he made that very important first trip to Chicago. Before he met Michelle, he went there to organize churches, black churches, and you know, get some stuff done for people who were impoverished in Chicago. And I talked to some of these wonderful women who became his surrogate moms. You know, they all were poor. They all had quite a few children, and they were just struggling to make it. And here this young 22, 3-year-old guy plops in their midst, and, you know, with this exotic background. But they told me, you know, boy, we never question. They look back and they think, why did we listen to this kid? Why did we think he knew anything? You know, we all followed him absolutely, just convinced us that he was right, and we fell into line. But in retrospect, of course, it was the right decision for them to make.
Right. And more than a few, I'm sure, said, hey, I've got a daughter. Come over for dinner.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they were always trying to set him up. And they were always worrying that he was too skinny and that he was working too hard and all those things. And they did come up with an interesting, you know, he was, even then he was very cool. He never lost his composure. And they were all, most of them were pretty, you know, fiery types. And they're wonderful to talk to because they've got that kind of passionate approach to life, all of them. But he would calm them down because they had to get concrete things done, you know. And but at one point he got very emotional, and that was, and this is before he ever met Michelle. We had to break up with his girlfriend at the time and go to Harvard Law School, and he broke down. And that was an interesting moment. Mm. It's only one of maybe two or three incidents that I know of where he lost his composure in front of people.
Mm. He cried when his grandmother died too. That was a moving moment.
Oh yes. Yes, absolutely.
Speaking to a lot of people.
Yeah.
There comes a time in our lives, I mean, I don't want to pinpoint because there was a lot else going on, but he's made mention of this, and you talk about his use of drugs in the book as well.
Mm-hmm.
He really was sort of on the edge of not becoming who he is now, right? He had a choice. He was fairly heavily involved in the party scene.
Right.
There's some unflattering chapters.
Right. Well, they're in that they were the same stories that he is alluded to, just a little more detailed. He definitely has owned up to the fact that when he was very young, he, you know, was headed in the wrong direction. And this is a time when his mother stepped in, really, I think, and because she wasn't around a lot. But when she was around, she made a difference in his life, and because she was a remarkable character as well. And she basically told him, you're going to end up like all of these other losers, you know, because there were quite a few people he was palling around with back in Honolulu in his teens, and he eventually straightened himself out. Was, you know, he never went over the edge to hard drugs, but he was dabbling there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became almost this monastic character when he went to Columbia University. You know, he had this ascetic life, you know, where he was extremely conscious of what he ate. He became a sort of almost a vegetarian, not quite. He ran 5 miles a day. He never drank. And his friend said he was incredibly boring during this phase of his life.
That's hard to believe, isn't it? But
yeah
I see. Let's welcome phone calls for Christopher Anderson, our guest this hour, author of Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage. It's really a great read, and we're welcoming phone calls on air. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're also in a pledge drive, and I do want to tell you, because I'm sure many of you are engrossed in this conversation, that if you can pledge at $150, which is fairly reasonable for many of you, I'm sure, we'll be so happy. You can remember this conversation and remember the presidency and get a lot of interesting information about both of them. We'll send you a copy of Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage. So go to WPR.org, or for the pledge, call 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's go to phone calls for Christopher, starting with Joan from Milwaukee. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Thanks for the honor of being first on this show. I bought Dreams from My Father at a discount because I'm poor. And as I got toward about three-quarters of the way through, I loved it all the way. But I was just waiting for Michelle to get into the act, so I'm afraid I'm hooked. And I'll probably buy this book at full price for my grandson, whom I'm trying to raise, have spoiled rotten, you know, and I'm going to tie it up with the other one when I kick him out and give it to him.
Boy, does this sound familiar.
He's a mixed-race child, and his girlfriend right now is mixed-race. Mm-hmm. And I just think that real stories like this just will give them a lift someday. And as for me, I need to read a love story right now, and I hope it raises the spirits of Michelle and Barack, too, because they must have a hard time right now.
Christopher.
Yes, absolutely, and thank you so much for pointing that out, that, you know, this is he and she stand as, I think, a kind of remarkable symbol for people, you know, for the nuclear African-American family. I mean, here is this dad who's there, very much there. And, you know, I think that in a sense it's ironic that this exotic guy with this exotic background, you know, a biracial father from Kenya, raised in Hawaii and in Indonesia, ends up being sort of the most quintessentially American president I think we've had in recent memory. I mean, all the others were to some degree aloof, removed, but these people really connect, and they connect because they have been completely open about their relationship. They, you know, I mean, she complains about what a slob he is at home, and he wish he would stop smoking, and you know, he says, oh, you know, she nags me all the time, but you know, what are you going to do? This kind of relationship, the banter that they have, really reflects what everybody goes through in this country, but nobody has seen in the White House in my lifetime, certainly, in any substantial way. So I think they're just terrific.
Tell me about the first date and how hard it was for him to get her to go out with him.
That was funny, and it's kind of a classic thing. Here, she is a big cheese already at this point in 1989 at a law firm in Chicago, big law firm. Her clients, by the way, she's in the intellectual property division, protecting copyrights and that sort of thing. So her clients are Barney, the purple dinosaur, and Coors Beer. So she's already been given some big jobs. And in comes this intern, summer intern, who's, you know, years behind her in law school. He comes in from Harvard, and she looks on paper. I've got to babysit this kid. She says, "Oh, you know, he and I have nothing in common, obviously." And he falls in love with her right away. Love at first sight. Tries to take her out. She says, "No, it's inappropriate. I'm your boss. I don't want to be seen dating you." Finally, she relents, and they go to see Do the Right Thing, the Spike Lee movie, which was out then. And of course, they bump into her boss in the lobby, which is, of course, you know. And I talked to him. It was Newton Minow, was her boss at the time, who used to be the head of the
FCC. Yeah.
You remember the vast wasteland?
Sure. Yeah.
But Newton told me that it was just cute as heck because, you know, they just acted like two embarrassed teenagers. You know, he knew them both well. You had hired them both. And so from then on, she saw what kind of a guy he was. Barack was really a special person, and gradually she fell in love with him. And then you flash forward 2 years, been dating 2 years, and they go to a restaurant, and she says, you know, I'm not the kind of girl who's going to hang around forever. You know, you've got to make a commitment. And he's giving the old, well, marriage is just a piece of paper argument. And all of a sudden the dessert comes, and there's the ring box on the dessert plate with the one-carat diamond ring in it. And she looks up at him, and he says, well, that sort of shuts you up, doesn't it?
It left her speechless.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Christopher Anderson is our guest. The book is Barack and Michelle, Portrait out of an American Marriage. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Our goal is to keep bringing you discussions with people like Christopher Anderson. I don't know about you, but I'm having a rip-roaring good time. Cheryl Gasser is here. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Kathleen. What a great conversation this hour, and we're just getting into it. How can we continue to bring you wonderful conversations like this with great guests like Christopher Anderson? Well, we do it with contributions from listeners just like you. Listener contributions are Wisconsin Public Radio's most important source of income, and your gift in any amount right now makes a huge difference as we raise the money that we need to pay for the discussions that you rely on. So please give securely online at WPR.org or call us toll-free 888-202-2552.
Again, you can give online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and help us pay for the programs that you depend on. We do have a goal of 25 pledges with about 29 minutes left to go.
And Kathleen, look, we've already heard from 13 people.
Great.
So we're halfway there.
All right, all
but
right.
Let's hear from you now. So if you've already given, thank you so much. If not, please pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You decide the amount of your pledge, but as Kathleen has said, when you give at the $150 level, ask for the book, Michelle and Barack, Portrait of an American Marriage. Pledge now at WPR.org or 202-2552.
Thanks so much, Cheryl. We do, as you know, try to be as timely as possible when choosing topics. We did, I keep thinking about what we've lived through the last couple of years. As you know, I bring this up, it was a while ago, but those of you who listened when we went to Dubuque, we cover politics really well, I think. Rhonda Fanning, our producer, loves politics as much as I do, and we've been on the story, and then all that has evolved as a result of the presidency and the healthcare debate in Afghanistan, et cetera. We really pride ourselves on these kinds of conversations. So please call with your support for these kinds of conversations and make your contribution, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This hour really is, Kathleen, a great example of the politics and the history mm-hmm. that you talk about every day, and you do language and you do science. You cover it all. It's always a wonderful conversation. Wisconsin Public Radio is lucky to have you. Listeners are lucky to hear you every day, and that's what we're here asking for your support. Keep these conversations with Kathleen and her guests on the air going strong. Your contributions make it possible. Let's hear from you now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know that your support makes your life more meaningful when you support things like Wisconsin Public Radio. And I've just spent a few days with 100 of you, and I know that WPR is meaningful in your life, and it's meaningful in my life as well. Keep us strong, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your contribution will make sure that we have the resources we need to give you the news and the talk and information that you will need in the coming year to help stay informed. Your pledge in any amount makes a difference, so pledge now online, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And here's where we are, Cheryl. We need, well, we're doing okay. We have 15 pledges. We need 10 more to reach our goal. 8 new pledges. That's marvelous. And just a reminder, for $150, I love to tell people, you can keep the conversation we're having going on because you can get a copy of Michelle and Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage, for a $150 pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you if you've already contributed. We heard this hour, Kathleen, from Phil in Green Bay, who says, WPR is the only media where I get a full discussion of the facts. Thank you, Phil, for that. We heard from Janet and Paul in Grafton, who says, WPR is an indispensable source of information on diverse subjects. Thank you so much for those wonderful comments, and they're all true. They are all true. And because you value Wisconsin Public Radio, decide what it's worth to you and make a pledge. Contribute now at WPR.org or call us 888-202-2552.
Thank you, Cheryl Gasser. We're speaking with Christopher Anderson. The book is Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage. And our next caller is John from Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Good morning. It's certainly nice to hear the name of Newton Minow evoked, the 1946 graduate of Washington High School on Sherman Boulevard.
All right.
There you go.
He was in Gene Wilder's class, by the way.
Oh, really?
Other name.
That's hard to fathom.
But I'd like to know a little bit about, because this really didn't come out during in the campaign, mm-hmm. about Mr. Obama's educational background. You mentioned that his sister is a classics professor in Heidelberg, and mm-hmm. I was wondering, he went to a pretty elite high school, I believe, in Honolulu.
Yes.
And if he had any Latin or Greek background, what did he study at Columbia, and
yes.
who are his favorite authors to read?
Well, he is a graduate of Punahou Academy, which is the Exeter and Dover all rolled into one in Hawaii. Only the cream of the crop go there. And his grandparents who were just working class folk, you know, scraped together enough money to send him, and as to their credit that they did. He was never at the top of his class. He was a good student. I talked to his teachers. He was solid, good, very charismatic even then, but, you know, kind of a B-plus kind of guy. The classics weren't part of the curriculum there. At least he didn't partake in them. I know that. But he did go on to Occidental University. He had a choice of a number, and that's in, you know, California and L.A. He had a choice of a number of places, but it's because he met a girl in Hawaii that he was kind of following to. She spoke so glowingly of this campus in L.A., so that's why he went to Occidental, transferred from there to Columbia in New York City, hoping to get this kind of urban experience and be exposed to, again, looking again for his own, where he fit in, because that was always his, his problem. I mean, he didn't feel that he belonged quite. He belonged everywhere but nowhere, you know, those kinds of situations. And then, of course, he went to organize people in the poor, as I said, in Chicago, decided he couldn't get anywhere unless he had a law degree. He couldn't make things really happen. Went from there to Harvard Law School. I spoke to his classmates there and to his main mentor, Larry Tribe, the great constitutional law expert, probably the greatest living, and they all said even then they knew it, that he, you know, Tribe told me he was convinced this guy would be president, interestingly enough. So, you know, he had a tremendous background educationally, as does Michelle. We can't leave her out of the picture. I mean, boy,
oh, no.
Princeton, and she worked hard, and she got better grades than he did. So,
didn't...
not because she was naturally more brilliant, but she was an extremely diligent student.
Did anybody ever say of her at Princeton or Harvard, this is the next president?
No, because that's not what she was after and what she was going for. And even today, she would never consider running for office. Her father was a Democratic Party precinct captain. And her dad was a great, by the way, Fraser Robinson, worked for the Water Department in Chicago all his life, his adult life. He had multiple sclerosis. The family kind of grew up coping with that. So that makes Michelle extremely attuned to the problems people have with health care. But she also saw the kind of nitty-gritty of Chicago politics, and anybody who gets an up-close view of that, you know, really, you have to go one way
right.
or the other in that seat.
Right.
Be part of it, or you're going to say, God, no. And she said, no, I don't want that. So when Barack said he wanted to, you know, run for the state Senate, I mean, right away, she was not thrilled, but she did get behind him.
Thanks so much, John, for your call. Pastor Ken from Hayward. Hi, Pastor Ken.
Good morning. It sounds as though the Mr. Anderson is very in-depth on Barack Obama and all that he's done. My question would be, why won't he release his birth certificate to the
state?
Yeah, I know the birth cert thing. It's interesting. All I can say is, you know, we never have academic records very seldom for presidents released or birth records. I don't know. There is a live birth certificate that has been released. But I can tell you that what I discovered was that there was contemporary reporting of his birth in the Honolulu Advertiser and another paper at the time. So unless someone, you know, knew that 46 years hence or whatever, this guy was going to be running for president, there you go. I mean, there it is in black and white, the reporting of his birth. And right. There is a woman who had a dinner with the recently deceased obstetrician who delivered Barack, and at that time he told her about the birth of this young man, the reason he knew about it is because Barack's father had already made quite a huge impression in Honolulu. You know, he was quite the sort of exotic figure there, coming from Kenya, arriving at the University of Honolulu, so people knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the University of Hawaii, excuse me.
It's time to move on from that. There's so much else to talk about. June from Shawano, hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I wanted to expound a little bit about how Michelle Obama's family felt when she was dating him. I went to school outside of Chicago in Evanston, and we had a lot of foreign students, and one of them was from Nigeria, and one of them was my best friend, who was black and part Indian from Chicago. And I kept nagging her about this gentleman, that she should date him. And she didn't think he was cool. So she came home with me at Thanksgiving, and I went to her home in Chicago. And she said the reason that they didn't care much for Africans was they had a picture that wasn't unlike white people at the time about Africans being, you know, a little bit behind the times.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up, I married the guy from Nigeria.
Ah.
And we were married that same year in Chicago.
Mm.
And I have a son who is a little older than Barack. And his father has passed away, and it's very familiar to me, shall we say.
Mm. Yeah. Well, of course, all of these differences in... If anyone thinks that any race has a monopoly on prejudice, they're wrong. Because, you know, in the African-American community, they're not necessarily... You know, that particular generation was not happy about biracial marriage either. As a matter of fact, when Barack's... I don't know if I mentioned this, but when Barack's own father married Barack's mom, the person who squawked the loudest was Barack's African father, who actually, you know, he was disowned his son. He was the angriest that anyone would. He didn't want the kind of racial purity of the African to be sullied by him marrying this white lady. So it's an interesting problem that's pretty universal, I think. It was then. I think it's a lot, obviously a heck of a lot better now.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk a little bit about his deciding to run for office and the problems that that created for the family. There obviously are certain places you have to be. I was interested in the race against Bobby Rush and the fact that Obama was in Hawaii for a family vacation and didn't return for a gun control vote, which may have cost him that election. That tension between wanting to be with family and this life of a politician is hard, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And, you know, the drama there with the Bobby Rush thing is interesting because, you know, Michelle was, as Jesse Jackson said, from the hood, and Barack wasn't. And Barack thought he could take on an incumbent, popular incumbent African-American congressman, Bobby Rush, in the primaries. And Michelle said, don't do this. You will lose, and you will lose big. But he did not listen to her because he thought he could, you know, could convince anybody of anything at the time. He was pretty young, fresh in politics, and of course, he went down to resounding defeat. And but during that time, what happened was that Bobby Rush's son was killed, gunned down, and so the vote on gun control was very symbolic. And Barack did not return from his annual family vacation in Hawaii for it, and that probably didn't cost him the election. There were just too many other things going against him at the time. But yeah, this pull with the family has been a huge strain. I mean, he was in the state senate for quite a few years trying to get his career off the ground. He's in Springfield, Illinois. She's back in Chicago. And that's what created really major tension because four nights a week he's gone and she's the one who had been his boss and was just as well educated as he was. And she said, boy, I did not sign on for this. I'm not doing this alone. You better make a decision. You know, you've got to spend more time with your family. It tore him up not to be around his two young children, but he was determined to, forge ahead. So really, there's this dramatic moment. I opened the book with it that kind of brought them together at one point when in September of 2001, they wake up in the middle of the night. Three-month-old Sasha is down the hall screaming. Mm. They can't stop her. They rush her to the emergency room. She has spinal meningitis.
Mm.
And so for 72 hours, they're just in the hospital room with her, waiting it out. And Michelle said it was the nightmare that brought them closer together than they'd ever been. Now, all the details of that, by the way, they have related to their friends in Chicago and Hawaii and even in D.C. over and over again. So that's pretty a detailed scene in the book.
Yeah. Do you think that there was a point where she was taking care of the kids, working full time, taking care of the house? Do you think that the tension ever reached a point where they almost didn't make it, Christopher?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, and he has owned up to that. I mean, he's absolutely said that it was make or break. He was not. She was angry all the time. You know, he had a circle of poker playing buddies in the state senate that he spent almost every night with, And they said that she would call constantly, and that he would get up from the game and walk over, and they could hear her, you know, really letting him have it. He'd come back and just be, you know, he didn't know what to do, but he felt that he had to press on. So what happened was, ultimately, you know, it's funny you mentioned Kate Hepburn before, whom I knew pretty well, and Kate Hepburn told me that in every relationship, one person makes the changes. One person has to adjust. In her case, she adjusted for Spencer Tracy, and in this case, Michelle adjusted for Brock, because, you know, she just said, she calls it the epiphany, when in 2004, when he was running for the U.S. Senate, she decided, well, I cannot ask him to change to make me happy. He's not going to change, and I've got to do it for myself. So she did these practical things. You know, she got a housekeeper in, she full-time live-in housekeeper. She got her mother to help out with the kids. Her mom had offered to do that for years, but they hadn't taken her up on it. She started going to the gym every day at 4:30 in the morning. You know, just these kind of little incremental things that just made her life easier.
And she must wake up at least every other day and say, oh, I'm a part of history. She probably doesn't think that, but I think that every other day. They're a part of history.
Well, I would think, nothing was more astounding to her than the way he delivered on all of his promises, and a lot of it was just luck, and he'd say that as well. I mean, that U.S. Senate race, you know, funny, but every one of his opponents just fell over like dominoes because of sex scandals, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he is, you know, I have to say, I'm a kind of a warts and all biographer. If there was any hanky-panky going on, I'd certainly say it, and you know, they're really, you know, he's really quite totally devoted to her, you know, and so he's kind of a squeaky clean candidate, and it's a good thing, because I think that's one of the reasons he got into the U.S. Senate in the first place.
Thanks, June, for the call. Trevor from Sturgeon Bay. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of public radio and your show especially, Kathleen.
Thanks.
I just wanted to ask your guest. Now, we've seen this concept of the American marriage, quote unquote. We've seen it with the Reagans, Nancy Reagan standing by her dying husband. We've seen it with the Clintons, Hillary Clinton standing by, you know, her husband after, you know, admitting infidelity. What is going to make Barack and Michelle different in the eyes of history? What about their relationship is going to, you know, push them farther than, you know, than the power couples, I could say, we've seen in presidential history?
That's,
well, first of all, they're far different from what you've discussed there. I mean, in a funny sort of way, a lot of people look back to Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt as a kind of the dream team in terms of a husband and the president and the first lady, I think. This couple's going to chart new territory. I mean, what they've made, what happened here, first of all, getting elected at all, considering the odds against him, just phenomenal. And she had played a huge part in that, right from the beginning of basically getting him to change his speaking style back when he was in the state Senate, right up to helping, you know, to convincing him to adopt the Yes We Can slogan, which he did not want to do initially. David Axelrod and Robert Gibbs could not convince him to take that slogan. She's the one who did it. And there are many other examples in the book of where she really had a say. But getting to the White House, she's trying to walk this line between the traditional first lady role that Laura Bush, you know, had, and the kind of co-presidency that Hillary was insisting on kind of catastrophically. I think, you know, when she talks about healthcare, it's going to be in the context of her father having MS, of her mother-in-law battling cancer and worrying about bills, of her daughter having meningitis. And that those are the kinds of things I think that speak to people in a very real way, and it'll be very effective.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Christopher, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, Kathleen, I love it.
We love having you.
Say, you know, you mentioned the nature of these books, and sometimes it's not such a pretty picture one writes. You know, you have to write it. And the Hillary Bill thing is a good example. Very
right.
Complicated couple. Good things about them. Not so good things about them. But this is a pretty. It's complex. There are different, facts, I think, that no one has known prior to this book. But in the end, it's a very kind of upbeat, inspiring book, I think.
Yeah,
and at a time with all this these sleazy books, I just have to say, I've never seen so many,
oh,
you know, climbing the bestseller list. And it's
oh, my, yes.
Depressing, you know?
Yeah, it is depressing. And we should say, I mean, it's not, as you say, it's warts and all. This is a complicated look. They're not easy people. There are a lot of layers to them.
Absolutely.
So it's not.
Absolutely. And of course, Michelle has said, look, I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. You know, we have a strong marriage, but it's not perfect.
Right.
And that's what makes it, you know, it makes them human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Christopher, on to your next book, whatever it may be. Thank you so much. And you should tell people. You should tell people to pledge too, right?
Because absolutely. Here, you know, I'm a huge. You know, of course, I'm in Connecticut, so we have a
right.
But public radio is a phenomenal asset to the whole country.
It sure is.
And I've got to say, it's the only place to go, really, for this kind of programming,
right.
And the news. And I'm addicted to it.
Right. I am too. Thank you so much, Christopher. Christopher Anderson, the book is Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage. And we are in our fall pledge drive for $150, which is a pretty hefty pledge, but I think many of you could manage it. We'll be so happy to send you a copy of his book. I know you're going to enjoy it. Cheryl Gasser joining me again in our studio. Hi, Cheryl. How are we doing?
Hi, Kathleen. We are doing really well.
Good.
We have a goal this hour of 25 pledges. We have made that goal. We've exceeded that goal, but there is still time for you to get your pledge in, to pick up the book, Barack and Michelle, for a pledge of $12.50 a month. So please, let's hear from you now. Your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, it's vital. Listener support, the most important source of income. So support this program. Support Kathleen and Rhonda and Rob with your pledge. Any amount to Wisconsin Public Radio, pledge online at WPR.org or call us toll-free, the number 888-202-2552.
I know you are enjoying the conversation with Christopher Anderson, author of Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage. And you should note, too, that we have a history with many of these authors. So he was with us talking about Kate Hepburn and Spencer Tracy. He's talked about Jack and Jackie. We had an interview with him on that. The book on Bill and Hillary. He's been a part of our conversations over many years now, so that's kind of neat. We establish these relationships. Once again, if for a few minutes, if you could take a few minutes for these conversations, many more to come, put a value on our programming, and make a pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Either way you give, it's easy and it's quick. All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two a week in a few minutes of your time, about 3 minutes. That's a dollar or two a week. It adds up to $50 or $100 for the year, or if you want the book, Barack and Michelle, $150 for the year. And then all year long, you'll benefit from this program with Kathleen and all of the other Wisconsin Public Radio programs that you love. So make your contribution now. Do it online. It's safe and secure at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And please give as generously as you can. Again, for a pledge of $12.50 or more per month, the book Barack and Michelle will be our thank you gift to you.
We thank you so much if you've already given, and I know many of you have. You even cut our pledge drive short. Thanks for all of those pledges as well. If you haven't, please help us stay on track by making your contribution right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
For me, it's really a sense of a connection to the world and the world of ideas. It keeps me informed. It keeps me thinking. I can't remember the number of times that I've had conversations with people saying, oh, I heard something this morning on Wisconsin Public Radio or National Public Radio. And then it's a way of having a very interesting discussion with other people about some of those ideas. And so I think that it keeps me informed and it keeps me thinking and is a way of engaging other people in important ideas. This is David Corey from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for information in the arts, culture, politics, and...
WPR.org for your pledge or 888-202-2552. That's where to go to make your pledge of support to WPR. Maybe your pledge is $50, $100, $500, or even $1,000. Whatever your amount is the right amount for you and for us as well. I'm Kathleen Dunn, back with Cheryl Gasser, and we are here to ask your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.
The number to call, 888-202-2552, the website, WPR.org. There are several ways to make your pledge. Giving on the web is especially efficient at WPR.org. If you're online now, near a computer, you barely have to stop what you're doing. You can pledge online. It saves the cost of sending you a reminder in the mail. Save yourself the cost of a stamp and the bother of writing a check. WPR.org. It's that simple and that quick.
Give online, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552. We're getting a number of pledges, which is great. We just have a few minutes. Oh, my gosh, we're almost done here with this hour, Cheryl. We only have a few minutes to go, so please call now, particularly to remember this hour and remember history, to the $150 pledge, and you'll receive a copy of Barack and Michelle, Portrait of an American Marriage. Portrait of an American Marriage. It's a lovely read, and you'll have a good time reading it. And you'll remember us, and we'll remember you.
Of course, no one would forget you, Kathleen. What a great interview this hour. And this is just one example of the wonderful guests. I think in the last month alone, you've talked with John Katz and Jane Goodall, Wendell Potter, Barbara Ehrenreich. The list goes on and on. And it really is a star-studded cast here with you, Kathleen, from 9 to 11, Monday through Thursday. And we're asking you now to please put a price, put a value on Wisconsin Public Radio, on Kathleen's show, and all the important programming, the entertainment that you hear, the news and the talk here on Wisconsin Public Radio. The number, 888-202-2552, and the website, WPR.org.
It's interesting you mentioned Jay Goodall. I was at my son's soccer game, and somebody, one of the people who listens to the show, came up afterward and said, "I can't believe you had Jane Goodall on the air." And I said, "Well, you can thank Rhonda for that. It was a hard book." I know it was. And somebody called in and said, "I can't believe I'm talking to Jane Goodall." That was a special interview. I'm glad you thought about that. All right. At any rate, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We're out of time here, Cheryl. We're doing okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for your support. Keep pledging through the news.
Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this great hour with Christopher. $150 and you get the book. Thanks to John Treader for all his help always. We have news coming up, and we'll return with more conversation on the Ideas Network.